This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we've got three sponsors for the show, the first being EasyWatch.com, who has over 30 years of experience in the security camera systems industry. In addition to helping businesses, EasyWatch specializes in security camera systems for schools. Secondly, the show is brought to you by Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it easy to assign, collect, and review student work, and provide rich feedback with annotations, voice notes, grades, and more. And finally, Tap Typing teaches students to type on the iPad. It has a structured curriculum with lessons ranging from beginner to advanced, typing tests for gauging improvement, and in addition to the built-in virtual keyboard and many third-party keyboards, has support for all types of external keyboards and keyboard cases. We'll tell you more about all of those, and in particular, we'll talk a lot about the keyboard case as the show goes on. Bradley, anything happened this week?
Big week?
Literally a big week.
I had a lot of coffee today. I was actually in class when the keynote was going on yesterday, and so it was one of those days where, like, a lot of my classes are structured around, like, one class where I'm explaining something in detail, and the next class is, let's do that. Yeah. And so this class this week was, let's do that. And so they kind of were working independently, and I kind of followed along on, I think it was Engadget's keynote, which I found to be probably the, like, their, I didn't watch the keynote live. And I just followed their live stream, and so it was good. And I, you know, those kids would need help, I would go help them and just kind of follow up. But, you know, you and I were talking about this last night. I don't know why, but I kind of just can't watch the keynotes anymore. I think it's because they're so long, and they're just so full of demos. And I get, and maybe it's like the fact that I have a bunch of kids and I value very much 2.5 hours or whatever, however long it is, more than I used to. But I just can't sit through a whole keynote anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I watched up until they finished with the iPad stuff, and then I was like, well, I'll see the rest of that later. But I, you know, because for us it's 6 p.m., which is, you know, just about when the kids are going to bed, or at least the baby's getting ready to go to bed. So it's quite a tricky time to negotiate 2 hours of uninterrupted time at that
6
point.
6 p.m.? You put your kids down at 6 p.m.? What? That is awesome.
Well, I start at 6 p.m. It takes a while, but there's baths.
We start, like, our... We have a hard rule that, like, our ideal time for our kids to be asleep is 8:30. I say this, like, being 3 weeks away from a newborn. We like to care our kids to be, like, in bed, almost asleep at 8:30. So we used to would start bedtime around, like, 8:25, and that was a terrible idea. That's, like, post-bath. So now, if we do bath, it starts at 7:45, and then, like, at 8, we mosey on into the bedroom, brush teeth, read stories, say our prayers, goodnight kisses, you know. Extra goodnight kisses, second hug, goodnight.
Yeah, drink your water.
No, there's no water. There is no water at our house. I have a 5-year-old. There's no water. There's no water at bedtime at our house.
Way too many computers.
Yes, and it's just, you know, I have to wake up and go to the bathroom. So yeah, we will have none of that. Yep. Interesting show, and it appears to be the last keynote of the year from Apple as well. So they kind of laid their Christmas cards on the table.
So, like, keynote itself, what do we get? Obviously, we should probably address just before we go into this, Bradley, we are not abandoning the Diffusion of Innovation series. We're coming back to that. But obviously, this is one of the biggest weeks for iPad since the iPad first came out. So we wanted to just kind of break in and address the keynote straight away. And then next week, we'll get back to Chapter 6 of the Diffusion of Innovation series that we're working on.
So it's basically like if you have a test at school and then, like, the teacher's sick.
Yeah. So you get an extra week for your homework on that. Awesome. Okay, so the keynote itself really falls into four parts, doesn't it? You know, we get the watch, the new watch materials, new watch bands, the iPad, the Apple TV, and the iPhone in that order. So you tempted back to the Apple Watch by any of the new styles?
I'm really not. And, you know, and I've thought about this. You know, I think you and I talked about this, but, like, I've really not used an iPad day to day much in a while, especially since I got the 6 Plus. So kind of my everyday carry right now is a 6 Plus and a laptop, a MacBook Air. And I kind of shuffled my kids took over my iPad, and I actually did order an iPad Mini 4 for my wife, and shuffling the other ones down the line. We had an iPad go belly up a few weeks ago. Of course, it was not the original iPad Mini that got broken. It was the Retina Mini. Always, never, the original Mini I have will never die.
So, it's like when you get glasses, you know, drinking glasses from a petrol station or something. They're the ones that never break. and all your fine glassware just shatter, you know. But the stuff from the grocery store and the petrol station just lives forever.
Well, my 2-year-old stepped on it and like a month ago, and it had like a small crack at the top, but like it was still workable. And then he got mad at me, like I was carrying him away from the car, and he pushed it and it fell. It was in my other hand and it fell on the concrete and shattered. Even though it was in a pretty decent case, but it was already like cracked.
Yeah, so once you get a crack, that's really, you know, the next ones are going to be the big ones, isn't it?
So I sold it on eBay broken for like $60. So that's kind of been my, and it's not anything like in particular. I'm like a simplify guy. And I don't think I even tweeted this because I couldn't figure out a way to say it or like it didn't sound negative. And I try very hard to not be negative consistently on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And you can look at Apple products or look at a product from any company and think it is an incredible product and say, I love this product and I think a lot of people will love this, but I'm choosing not to buy it. And I think that messes with a lot of people's like kind of like psyche when it comes to Apple, because you know, coming from a world where, you know, early part of the 2000s is like you had an iPod and you had a Mac computer.
Yeah.
And it was like there was one iPod, and if you didn't like it, you didn't like the iPod. And there was really no ifs, ands, buts. And then there was the iPhone, and it was like the same thing. Like either it was like you wanted the iPhone or you didn't want the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and the way their product categories have evolved over time, they cover more ranges of options. So like I kind of put like I just will almost consider them to be iOS devices. So do you want like the big iOS device or the smaller one or both in terms of like the smaller one being the phone? And it's the same thing with watch. Do you want an Apple wearable? If you don't, that's okay. Like maybe that's just not something that you want. Just in the same way as like I can say I don't want a Mac Pro, but they're it's a great computer. And it's not a diss against Apple or saying the product sucks by me not buying it. And so I kind of feel that way about the watch. Like the watch is a great device. Mm-hmm. Some of that was really neat, but just not something I want at this time. Now, I will say one of the things that Apple needs to do on the watch, and it probably is a year at this point away, is there needs to be a tie-in between activity rings and Game Center. Because like I am on like quite a few Fitbit challenges with like friends and my gosh, they get competitive. Like so much so like I have friends that will turn off Bluetooth on their phone so they don't sync, like because the Fitbit will periodically sync in the background and they will turn Bluetooth off so it can't. So you don't know if you're ahead or behind for like 12 hours at a time. So like, so it's a mind game. So you're sitting there on the weekend, like we'll do these weekend challenges. And so it's like you're sitting there, you know, maybe 2,000 steps ahead at 9 o'clock on Sunday night. And you're like, oh, I got this in the bag. Well, then all of a sudden they go work out and sync at 11 o'clock and then you lose. And so I think like, you know, that's one of the things I think Apple could take away from Fitbit is like, so this, like the challenge aspect of activity rings, because that's the activity rings, just like they are on Fitbit with the steps, or something that people kind of get addicted to fulfilling. It's like a box to check. And you see that, like, you know, Jim Dalrymple has said that. Marco Arment has said that. It's like these people that are not, like, exercise people, like, I got to get my rings in. It's like, you know, it's almost like it's like when you have a badge to clear on your phone, you got to just check it off.
Yep.
And so, yeah, say all that. Say, like, great device. Probably, you know, not looking to get one anytime soon. Maybe in the future. I don't know. But, like, right now I'm quite happy with my my old Fitbit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that the Apple Watch announcements were kind of the first thing in the keynote, they were basically a sort of minor refresh for Christmas, I think, you know, with the new bands. It was nice to see the sport band get such a wide range of colors, because I am personally in love with the sport band. I think it's the most comfortable and sleek watch strap I've ever worn. You know, the fact that the end tucks under and doesn't catch on anything is amazing. Not all the colors were for me, of course, you know, but I think I might be getting the orange one for Christmas or something to go with the black watch. So, yeah, I thought it was nice. And it was interesting that they did an aluminium gold color just so soon after, you know, gold equals $10,000, you know, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of poseurs wearing the gold Apple Sport watch trying to make people think that it's an actual $10,000 Apple watch.
Yeah, I think this is their diversification of colors across their products is like a brilliant move, because I'm already thinking, like, if we end up like doing MacBook Ones for our teachers, next refresh, like, I'll be a hero if I'm like, hey, you can pick out one of three colors. Like, that will, personalization of devices is a thing, and you rarely see an iPhone without a case, and people just like to make things their own. And, you know, I would love to know. Like, there was an old saying when I worked in retail, it was UPT. They would track your units per transaction. You always wanted it to be like 1.5 or above. And so I would love to know, like, cases sold or bands sold to watches sold.
Yeah.
And because that's got to be those, particularly like the sport bands, that's like, it's got to be all profit, just all profit.
Yeah. I mean, it's like 50 cents worth of rubber, you know. I mean, the thing that has got me about the Apple Watch and bands is that before the watch came out and I knew I was going to order one, I was, you know, there's a tweet you can go back and look. I was like, I can't imagine being the kind of person who would think about swapping bands just to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was all Mr. Functional and black. And but it's kind of got to me, you know. I'm like, well, actually, you know, an orange band would be pretty cool, or, you know, a dark blue one or whatever. And I think, you know, maybe in the initial set of sport colors, I only like the black one. I didn't, the other ones are kind of brighter colors for younger people, perhaps. But now they've got kind of more grown up colors as well. I think it's, they're getting to me slowly, but they're getting to me.
it's like, I don't know, it's like different, having different kinds of belts. I mean, I have multiple belts for my pants.
Well, see, I've always been the kind of guy who is one of everything. Like, I've got one pair of shoes, I've got one belt until it breaks, I've got one jacket until it wears out, you know. I don't know why I'm like that, but I don't like to think about what which of the multiple jackets I was going to wear that day.
But do you not listen to Cortex, or like the most recent episode of Cortex?
I did, yeah. Two is one and one is none.
Yeah, if you have one belt, you have zero belts, because you always have to have a backup. And I'm kind of that way with a lot of things. Like, whenever I buy deodorant, I buy like five. Mm-hmm. And when we buy toilet paper, we buy enough to, you know, live forever on. So, yeah, I like to have multiples. I don't like to be, I like that. When I go buy air filters, I buy multiples. Because to me, a lot of that stuff is like, it's not the fact that I have to go buy it, but it's the fact that I actually have to go somewhere to buy it.
Yeah, well, I'm such an Amazon shopper now that I know that I just pull my phone out and press a button and one will be here tomorrow. Of almost anything I can think of.
I need to buy my clothes on Amazon. That would be nice.
I have done this thing.
I have shoes coming from Amazon. It's like, it's yeah, it was ever cheaper than Zappos, even though it's the same company. But that, to me, the fact that like everything is just like, you just buy it and it comes the next day, I think is one of like the most, if someone like from the past like came and just like dropped into 2015 and watched this for a few days, and it's like, oh, you need diapers? It's like, they just come. Like, a person delivers them to your house. Like, it's the most amazing thing to me that you can buy something and it will ship to your house in 2 days for free.
It kind of makes me wonder whether 3D printers actually need to be a thing. Because the fact that Amazon's kind of like a 3D printer that takes 24 hours to print something. But it can print anything that you could possibly want.
Well, I'm kind of bearish on that, like, taking off, where it's like, you know, I heard the old thing. It's like, oh, you need a screw. You could download the thing and you can print it. But, like, is the materials, like, do you have the right materials? Are they strong enough? I don't know. Like, I'm bearish on 3D printing taking over like that kind of stuff versus as I am like, you know, IoT or Internet of Things, like taking over my home. Like, you know, everything in my house is automated. It's like, I don't want houses that have firmware updates. I kind of look at it like, I feel like a lot of the home automation is like the central, was Central Vac a thing in Scotland like about 15 years ago where you had like a whole house vacuum?
Nope. I've never seen that. I know what you're talking about, like a little socket in the wall that vacuums and you put the hose in. Yeah.
Yeah, you pull out and it's like, that used to be a thing and like nobody does anymore because it always broke. Vacuums always break. And then like you have a built-in vacuum to your house that's broken.
You're calling a builder instead of taking it to the electrical shop. Yeah.
Or the electrical shop, buy a new one off Amazon. What are you talking about?
Well, exactly.
I think things like Amazon, and that's where, to me, and we'll get to this with the Apple TV, but like online shopping on iOS devices, like I probably shop more on my iPhone than I do, like I actually go to stores and buy things, and probably even quantity, but also like per dollar amount too.
Oh yeah, most, absolutely, definitely. I only go to shops when I have to, emergencies, and I need it immediately situations. But anything that I can wait a day for, I will wait a day for.
Yes, it is. So why don't we stop a minute and thank our first sponsor of the night. the fine folks at EasyWatch. EasyWatch has been with us for the past few weeks. Thank them for their support of Out of School. It's easywatch.com, E-Z, the letter E, and Z, watch.com. They have over 30 years' experience in the security camera systems industry. In addition to helping businesses, EasyWatch specializes in security camera systems for schools. Many security camera systems are not sufficient, and EasyWatch values the quality of their products and their customers above all else, meaning they won't sell it if it doesn't meet their standards. You know, I was having a conversation with one of our, I went to that my local hardware store and talking about how I really feel like the service industry is back. Because it's so hard to compete on price now because we have this race to the bottom. I feel like customers are kind of like, I don't know, valuing service as much as anything else. And I know I am personally as a shopper. And so EasyWatch tests every system extensively and offers lifetime tech support. During the past 15 years, over 100,000 systems have been installed. And over 60% of their sales come from repeat customers, which they believe is the greatest endorsement of the quality of the products and the excellent service they give. Security solutions for schools and school systems are more important than ever, and they have a great deal for out-of-school listeners. Go to easywatch.com/out-of-school to learn more and get a custom quote. And if you go to that URL, you'll get 17% off. It's easywatch.com/out-of-school. Thanks to EasyWatch for sponsoring the show this week.
Okay, so iPad Pro, the long-rumored, long-awaited, much-hoped-for the salvation of Israel, the iPad Pro, has arrived, and this is it. What do you think?
I feel like the iPad Pro is the Mac Pro. That it is something that like a lot of like tech people will buy and want to use. Like just that people buy the Mac Pro when they don't need it, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But like the average person, I don't feel like this is not the iPad for them. I feel like it's not because it's too big, because it's too expensive. And mm-hmm. so I think that it's like when someone came to you and said, hey, which iPad should I buy? And you're like, I'm just going to goof off at the house. Like, you're going to probably recommend the Mini or the Air 2. And as you said to me yesterday, like, the problem is iPads aren't selling well, so they make one that's bigger and more expensive.
Yeah. It's an interesting strategy for that. I think but I think your comparison, Bradley, and I mean, the name is opposite, right? The comparison to the Mac Pro is solid, because you're right. There will be people like me who don't need it, but will go and buy it, right? But, you know, if you work at Pixar, or if you are, you know, producing podcasts every day of the week, something with that kind of processing power, you know, if you're doing, you know, scientific computation or something like that, you absolutely need that machine. And you need it for three specific reasons that you can specify. I need it because of this, 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 and this, therefore Mac Pro. And I think right now, the iPad Pro is a little bit the same. So the demos that were on stage were very telling to me. You know, if you're a doctor dealing with a lot of medical imagery, or if you're an artist or designer who really wants to get the high resolution digitizer and the pencil, then the iPad Pro immediately makes sense to you. Whereas I think for many, there's a group of people in the middle who, there's obviously some people who will never need or want the iPad Pro, but there's a group of people in the middle who are possibly going to be swayed either way. And I think what this comes down to is that iOS 9, and I suppose iOS 10 actually, needs to make a big play for a lot of those users. And to me, I've always had this line that I've used, that iPad hardware is only interesting insofar as it enables a great experience of software. Because like Tim Cook said on stage, the iPad becomes the thing you want to do with it. So when you pull up Paper by 53, it becomes a sketch pad. When you pull up Fourscore, which is a music stand application, it becomes a piece of music that you can play to. When you bring up GarageBand, it becomes an instrument, you know. And with so many things on iPad, it's about the apps. And if you've got workflows that work on iOS, your life is a joy. And if you've got workflows that don't, it's more difficult. And that's something that I've been kind of looking into a little bit with my own workflows, knowing that this was coming, and also just being curious about the whole thing again. What I did was I set up IFTTT. They've got this app called Do Note, and what it is it just opens up to an empty text field, and you can type something in and press a button, and it will do something with that text. Well, what I did was I set that up so that I could put in a note, and it would just append to a Google Doc, and every time. For the past 3 or 4 days, every time that I have not been able to do something on my iPad and gone back to my Mac, I would just open up Do Note and I would fire in an explanation for why I was pulling my Mac out again. And I thought I would just kind of quickly run through some of the things that I found myself having to do over the past 3 or 4 days that I couldn't do on the iPad. And this maybe gives you an insight into what kind of things I would personally need from iOS in order to sort of move forward with the iPad Pro as being a main device for me. So firstly, I had to rip a number of DVDs, which amusingly I couldn't actually do on my MacBook Pro either because it doesn't have a DVD drive, but I managed to borrow an Apple SuperDrive to do that job. I had to convert an Access database to CSV, which I did on my Mac, but I since found there was a way to do it on iOS. But then I had to create a FileMaker Pro database from that CSV file. And obviously there is FileMaker Pro on iOS, but it's not the full FileMaker Pro. You can't create databases with it. You can just sort of update and view them. An organization sent me a sort of PDF, but it's called a dynamic XML form. And this is kind of, I don't know if you've seen this, Bradley, it's like a PDF where it loads the content dynamically from the internet once you open it. Except nothing made by Apple supports this. So you can't view it in iOS, you can't view it on preview in the Mac. The only thing you can do is I sent it to somebody and they sent it back to me converted. So that was a showstopper there. I tried to write a script in Pythonista and then upload it to iTunes U, which is not allowed by policy because Apple has strict rules around when you can share program code around on iOS. So that's something that could be fixed by Apple if they wanted to. In school, I had to copy a file simultaneously to 4 Macs using remote desktop, which is the way that I have been sort of my legacy workflow for sharing files with students who are using the Mac for their exam classes. Obviously, I could have achieved that using something like Google Drive or Dropbox if I'd set that up, but those kids are kind of halfway through a thing and I didn't want to change their workflow for that. So I still use that remote desktop a little bit, but not as much as in times past. We had a thing about email. There was an email that was getting sent that wasn't getting the right headers. So I wanted to go in and look at all the raw headers for the email, and I couldn't do that in iOS because I couldn't look. None of the iOS mail clients show you the raw source of the message. And then I went on to Gmail on the web, but because I was on an iPad, it wouldn't show me the full desktop UI with a button that says Show Original. So that was a showstopper there. I tried to download and install the iOS 9 GM seeds from Apple, and I had to do that through iTunes on the desktop, which was kind of weird. Public betas can obviously be installed over the air, and obviously full updates can, but I wanted to get one early and test it. I had to edit the school website, which one part of the CMS requires Flash for multiple uploads of images, so I couldn't do that. I had to extract iOS icons from iTunes to print up a wall display of different iOS apps. So that's, I don't know if people know how to do that, but if you go into iTunes and you click on an app in your library, this is on the Mac, and you click on the icon and do copy, it will copy that and then you can create a new file in preview and paste it in there and you get a massive resolution icon, which is really nice to use if you have to ever get an iOS icon for something. And then finally, obviously, recording and editing this podcast is something that you and I have done this on iOS before, but it is a very much more kind of cumbersome process than doing it on the Mac. So that's maybe not technically one that is a total failure, but in terms of time spent versus time saved, that one's kind of on the borderline as well.
Well, I actually just got on the iOS 9.1 public beta today. So if you're if you're a public beta person, you can now do iOS 9.1.
Okay. Anything new in that?
I think the taco emoji.
Yes. Apparently the middle finger emoji is coming as well.
I'm assuming more. Yeah. I'm assuming more, but that's all I know. That's all I have in mind. So before we move on, let's thank our second sponsor of the night, the fine folks at Shobee. Shobee is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobee, teachers can easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads and then provide feedback directly on the documents through rich annotation features such as the pen tool, text, and voice notes. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobee from thousands of iPad apps or by using Shobee's built-in tools. New to Shobee this year is the Gradebook feature for Shobee Pro, which allows teachers to easily add, review, and export student grades. More great features like portfolios and parent access will be coming to Shobee this fall. Shobee Basic is 100% free, and teachers listening to this show can get the Gradebook and enhanced annotation features of Shobee Pro for 30% off if they purchase Shobee Pro annually. So again, you can try it for free with Shobee Basic. Go to Shobee.com to learn more about it, or search for Shobee in the App Store, Shobie. Thanks to Shobee for sponsoring the show this week.
Okay, so digging a little bit more on iPad Pro, Bradley, I think, I mean, in terms of hardware, it's kind of interesting and kind of not, I think. I don't know if you agree with me on that. I mean, it's the thing is obviously the screen size, right? That's the thing that makes it the iPad Pro. And I looked at it on measurements, and basically my 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro is almost exactly the same footprint as the iPad Pro. It's 1 centimeter shorter in its height. Than the MacBook is wide, but apart from that, it's basically that size. So it's quite an easy way to kind of imagine what that would be like to hold in your hands and so on. It's got an A9X CPU, which they're claiming is 1.8x CPU improvement and 2x GPU improvement over the iPad Air 2. That's quite a lot, because if you think how smooth the iPad Air 2 is today on iOS 8, I think there's a lot of headroom to do a lot more on that iPad. 4 speakers, unspecified amount of RAM, but the rumor is 4 gigabytes, 802.11ac Wi-Fi, but a strange set of storage configurations, did you think, Bradley? There's 2 Wi-Fi models. One is 32 and 128, and then the LTE version is only 128 gigabytes. The yeah. 128 I can understand, but the 32? Don't get it.
Yeah, I kind of agree there. It's a... they get so many SKUs. I mean, I guess I see why they're trying to like cut down the number of SKUs they sell. I mean, that's got to be the reason. It's just like, yeah, and they must have some data that show that X percent of people that have LTE also have like this configuration. So let's just make it simple.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe the one sort of logical reason I could think of for the existence of the 32 gig Wi-Fi model was for people who basically want it as a drawing tablet. You know, and are using it as a way to kind of take drawings with them, and then they'll offload them to a Mac when they get home, sort of thing. And for that kind of use case, I think 32 gigs is probably fine if you're buying it just as like a dedicated drawing tablet. Whereas anybody who's buying it as a potential laptop replacement, I think it's probably right that they're not offering, say, 64 to people like that, because, you know, you should either you easily fit under the 32 cap, or you should have 128. And I think perhaps that's maybe the sensible way to go with it.
Yes.
It's got the higher resolution touchscreen, which is something I've mentioned, you know, many times I thought iPad should probably get at some point. Although it's not a pressure sensitive screen with the pencil, all the pressure sensitivity is in the pen and not in the screen itself. And then we've got the smart connector for the keyboard, which is these 3 kind of magnetic dots on the side of the iPad where the power and data is sent to the keyboard, which is quite interesting because that means, Bradley, that the keyboard is not Bluetooth and doesn't have its own source of power, so you don't have to recharge or change batteries in it, all of which is quite nice, I think.
Yes.
And I certainly hope that comes to other iPads because, say, in an exam situation in schools, it's really nice not to have to deal with Bluetooth keyboards. It would be great just to plug in a keyboard and go. And I know in the US you can get a Logitech keyboard for iPad that is just a lightning connector. But those have never come to Europe. And, you know, we've talked about that in the show maybe a year ago, I think. And I was really quite enthusiastic about them and I thought we would get some. But I don't think that product has ever shipped in Europe. It's only in the US.
Must not have been selling well, yeah, if it never did.
I blame the Common Core standardized testing. I'm saying that in a jest, but it wouldn't surprise me to discover that there are some states where there is a, you know, statutory requirement that any computer used to take a Common Core test has these specified features, one of which is a plugged-in keyboard or something like that. Maybe it was just made for that market, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Could be.
Yeah. Performance-wise, clearly the fastest iPad there's ever been. I mean, on the keynote, they were talking about it being faster than 80% of the PCs sold last year, which I think if you look at the way that PCs have been selling, I don't think a whole lot of high-end PCs have been getting sold recently. So that might be a little bit of an inflated number, but certainly it's playing in that ballpark, which is quite interesting. I think that's... performance is always important, you know, and people have said since the iPad 2 that the iPad was fast enough now, doesn't need to get any faster, and I've never believed that to be true ever. I never believed that about computers yet either. so I think that's quite interesting, but also the increased write speed to memory and storage Because that's something that iPad has been sluggish on, is, you know, like you're backing up and restoring over USB. The speed of writing to the flash storage on iPad has been quite slow as well. So it'd be good to see all of that, all those numbers going up.
Yeah, it's, you know, anytime you have a new product, it seems to get faster more quickly than existing products. There's more room to grow.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you feel about the size of it, Bradley? Do you think it's too big?
No, because if you're going to go big or go home. And it's got to be enough of a difference to exist, or otherwise, like, the Air would need to go away. I mean, like, I think back to when there was, like, the 13, 15, or I guess for a time probably an 11, 13, 15, and 17-inch laptop. It's like there's too many. And I feel like, you know, if it's not going to be really big, then why does it need to exist?
Yeah, it does have to sort of stand apart, doesn't it? And I think the key thing is that, you know, it's got to unlock new use cases and new capabilities. And clearly the silicon is there to enable new and powerful applications. But I think the screen also has to do that as well. And that physical increase in size has to pay off in some way. And clearly what this is all about is iOS 9 multitasking, right? Where you get two apps side by side and each of them taking up 50% of the display. Now, on an iPad Air, what you get there is if you have an app in two-thirds and one-third, the one-third app is an iPhone-style app and the two-thirds app is an iPad-style app. But if you go 50-50, both apps end up showing, they're told to show their iPhone interface rather than their iPad interface. And clearly that's not a great proposition for an iPad is, I got this iPad, it can do two up apps, but I'm basically using iPhone apps all the time now. And you're good. It's like I've got two iPhones stuck together. So I don't know how you could sell that. But the iPad Pro is clearly going to be two iPad class applications side by side. And I think if nothing else, that is the thing that sells it. And if iOS 9 multitasking turns out to be the game changer that some people are saying it is, then I think the iPad Pro is going to be a much bigger seller than people think, because having two iPad apps side by side is, I think that's going to be very compelling for a lot of use cases. And we were talking about it in the staff room today, and that was another thing to talk about, is how interested my colleagues were in the iPad Pro. And we were talking about some things that we found tricky with iPad, or things we've not tried with iPad because we knew it would be difficult. And one of them was using electronic books. And we've always said, you know, the iPad is our device for working on, and we have the book on paper, so we can see both things at once. And that's the way we've worked for, you know, 5 years now with iPad. The iPad is not the book. The iPad is the thing to write on, and the book is the thing to read from. But, you know, if you are able to put, you know, pages on one side and the Kindle app on the other side, and have the keyboard up and see the book and write about it at the same time, suddenly that becomes an incredibly compelling study tool, in a way that it's currently not. And I think that could really influence the demand for, certainly our demand for digital texts, you know, digital books that people would study from and write about as well. So I think there's definitely scope for some really interesting new use cases coming along with multitasking on iOS 9. And my feeling is that the iPad Air, the iPad Pro, sorry, is just going to make it better. You're going to see, you know, more tools, more interface, and certainly more content as well. So I'm very interested in the device overall, but I'm waiting to see whether iOS 9 brings enough to justify the cost of the device. And I think that's really only the only major stumbling block with the iPad Pro, is just the sheer cost of the device.
Yeah, I mean, that's well. Before we get into that, let's thank our final sponsor, because I got a lot to say. Final sponsor of the night is Tap Typing. Tap Typing app teaches students to type on the iPad. It has a structured curriculum with lessons ranging from beginner to advanced, a typing test for gauging improvement, and in addition to the built-in virtual keyboard and many third-party keyboards, has support for all types of external keyboards and keyboard cases. Tap typing has many educator-focused features as well. It is appropriate for all ages and supports multiple user profiles in a single install of the app. Additionally, Tap Typing sends no personal data to the cloud, so there are no student privacy issues. After just 3 sessions in tap typing, beginners increase their typing speeds by over 60% on average. This minimal time investment yields a permanent boost to productivity and soothes one of the most painful aspects of the iPad user experience, typing. Again, I think I mentioned on the past shows, we own this app and we use it. Own 80-something copies of it. So this is a great app, and it is, in my opinion, the only typing trainer for the iPad. Learn more about it. Go to gettaptyping.com, or you can search for Tap Typing in the App Store. Thanks to Tap Typing for sponsoring the show once again this week. So yeah, and that's really what I'm coming out at now is the price, because if you don't, price is what it is. I mean, like, you know, are you interested in the Apple TV, the new Apple TV at $50? Sure. $200? I don't know. And so we can talk about, like, a price shouldn't matter. It should be about total value. But price is a part of value. It's what you spend versus what does it do for you.
Relative advantage, right? Go back to last week's show. Right.
And so I guess I'm going to say this, and I may have to regret saying this because it may be wrong. Or if you're not interested or don't think you can do your job on an iPad or don't want to do your job on an iPad now, I don't think the iPad Pro changes that. Because again, let's look at, like, you know, let's look at, like, general office worker. What about the iPad Pro changes the game for them? It's a bigger screen, sure. Yes, you can have 2 apps open, sure. But also at what cost? Because by the time you buy the iPad Pro, minimum $800, you buy the $100 pen, was a $169 keyboard. Mm-hmm. I mean, that keyboard's expensive, $169. You have close to $1,100 plus tax in an iPad.
Yep.
I can get a MacBook Air with similar specs for less money, or about the same. I think it's about the same.
Yep.
And so it comes down to...
You see similar specs though, Bradley, but your laptop isn't going to have a touchscreen. It isn't going to have highly responsive pen input, and it's not going to have a camera in the back that you can use to shoot video and then immediately edit it in iMovie.
But what if that's not what you need? So that's what I'm getting at. It's like, there are jobs where that's not important. And, and there are jobs, like, if you're at a desk all day and you're, you know, if you're the type of person that, like, uses a mouse, you know, and to manipulate things on the screen, you have maybe 2 monitors open, like, the iPad Pro doesn't change it for you. But that's not to say, if you're the type of person like you that's, like, you know, talked about, you know, you're keeping track of your use cases, like, it may be a game changer. But I don't think someone, you know, that, like, I'm just, you know, a call center employee that, you know, answers the phones all day, I don't think that changes things for them.
You know, because I agree. Yeah.
They're still using the mouse. And so it really comes down to the question of, who is the iPad Pro for? It's not for students and teachers, because no one can afford that in the schools. You know, we schools aren't even buying the current gen iPad. They're buying, like, the iPad Air when the iPad Air 2's out, and we're hopeful they'll buy 32 gigs instead of 16. Mm-hmm. So at $800, you know, we've been saying for a year or so now that most schools aren't deploying Macs anymore. It's iPad or Chromebooks. I mean, there are still some Mac schools, but that's not the majority, because the more schools that go one to one, the newer schools are just now doing it because of financial stuff. And so, like, they can't just suddenly come up with, like, $1,000 per student.
Yeah, no, I don't think in any sense is the iPad Pro supposed to be the machine that schools will go one-to-one with. It's simply the economics don't allow that to happen, except perhaps in the most wealthy schools in the world, of which there are, you know, you can count them in the fingers of both hands. I do think, though, you know, on conversation with colleagues at school today, I do think that the iPad Pro is potentially an excellent single computer for teachers to have in schools where workflows can be rethought and cloud storage can be effectively deployed and accessed, which, of course, probably takes out about 80% of the schools in the world because most of those things are not true. But in principle, you know, I certainly think for a school like Cedars or a school that has gone one-to-one iPad, for a teacher to have the opportunity to bring, you know, because a teacher doesn't do incredibly sophisticated things on their laptop. You know, they're doing things the way they've done them in the past, basically. And And perhaps this is the way it goes, Bradley, is that the iPad Pro is not for, you know, people who are 35 to 50 right now when it comes out. Really what I think the iPad Pro is really going to appeal to in a couple of years' time, once the price comes down a couple of notches and different things happen, is see the kids who are 14, 15, 16 in my school right now, and then they're going to go to university in a couple of years, and they're going to step out of my school, they're going to leave their iPad behind, and they're going to look for another kind of machine to go to college with. I think iPad Pro is just going to be standing there waiting to fall into those kids' arms. I really, really think that. Because if you think about what that thing can do, you've got the Office Suite on it, you've got Apple Suite, you've got all kinds of apps that kids are know and like. You've got Explain Everything, you've got, you know, Omni Outliner, you've got, you know, you name the app you're thinking of. And you then give them a stylus for their lectures and their labs and things, you know, paper by 53, doing your sketches in your biology lab or whatever of the experiment, you know, whatever you're seeing. I think in time to come, this might actually just be a generational thing, that anybody who is currently doing a job that they well understand on a laptop will probably retire still doing it on a laptop. But the new generation of workers coming through, and particularly kids coming through iPad schools, I think instead of those kids coming out and buying a Mac to go to college, I very much think that some of them at least will come out and buy an iPad Pro to go to college. And I think that might be the actual play that's going on here, rather than trying to convert laptop users right now.
Yeah, I don't think, like, in 2015, someone who is at their computer for 8 hours a day in the workplace, the iPad Pro isn't replacing their laptop for them or their desktop. I think and it's taken me a while to kind of like articulate that. I think the iPad is the most amazing device for people in their jobs that do not use a computer all day. In terms of teacher, somebody like, you know, retail employees, car salesman,
maintenance staff, people going to other sites to do a job.
Very mobile workers. Mm-hmm. I think the iPad is able to be used as that you can use a computer in places where it wasn't practical before to carry a laptop and, like, you know, hunch in the corner and you type real quick. The mm-hmm. iPad is the most amazing computer for that. I think the issue with, like, people sit at their desk all day and do something is, to me, still the lack of ergonomics on touch versus, like, you know, constantly having to reach up and touch screen. You know, if you're like constantly switching between apps, like, I mean, that's still a tiresome thing. Where on a mouse, you know, you can, you know, obviously just, you know, it's the kind of the ergonomics are better. Yeah. So I think it really comes down to pick the device that matches, you know, any device can be your primary device. For a lot of people, like we mentioned, those mobile people, for a lot of mm-hmm. people, that could be a 6 Plus.
Oh, yes.
It depends. You know, you look at your job and say, what am I doing? What are my workflows? What device makes the most sense? For some people, that's going to be an iPad Pro. For some people, that might be an iPhone 6 Plus. For some people, that might still be a MacBook One. It's just going to depend. And I think that's the place that the technology industry has to get to when they evaluate these products, is to not evaluate them as someone that lives in San Francisco, you know, going from coffee shop meeting with venture capitalist people. I mean, that's not, you know, that's just not real life. And so you have to look at it of, like, okay, what do people do in their jobs? Like, okay, this industry, what are they doing? What's the best device for that? It might be a desktop. It might, you know, I can think of industries where a desktop is still better. Like, you know, if you edit graphics all day. Like, if you're a movie editor, probably a desktop with two huge monitors is better than a laptop all day long. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the laptop is bad. It's just not the right tool for the job.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing we have to remember, that, you know, when we work with computers all the time, is that there are vast swathes of the economy that have never really computerized fully. You know, every time you go to somewhere and you have to fill out a form, or you get given a form, or something like that, then, you know, there are things that just haven't been computerized. A guy comes to your house to fix something, and I had this happen recently where I had a drain blocked in the house, and I phoned a company called DynoRod to come and sort it, and the guy came, and he fixed it very quickly, did a great job, and then I had to pay him. And I was told on the phone, yeah, you can totally pay by card. So I told him I wanted to pay with my credit card, and he went into his van and he brought out, you know, one of those like rugged Toshiba laptops, you know, with the big builder's laptop. He brought one of them out, and then he brought out of this box an entire point of sale card terminal in order to process my credit card. And I was just like,
you know,
this is a company that, you know, and then it didn't work, you know, so I had to drive around and get some money. But this is a company that hasn't rethought their process. But I think there's such an opportunity still for so many processes in the economy to go electronic that haven't yet gone electronic. And I think potentially that, I don't know if the iPad Pro is necessarily the game changer there, but I think it's actually the Apple partnership with IBM that is potentially very influential there. And I suspect the iPad Pro is part of that. I'm not saying IBM phoned them up and said, you got to make the iPad Pro, but I'm pretty sure IBM can see a way that they're going to sell a lot of them to certain industries, right? Certain industries that need those tools, writing tools, or industries that need a big screen, or industries just where they have high-value mobile workers. I mean, the demos were instructive, right? Doctors, artists, designers, things like that. You know, it's not for every employee, but it's for the high-value employees that need the best tool in order to make their time as productive as they can make it.
It's the same reason, like, some people get really nice laptops and some people get two-year-old desktops.
True, like, that.
It's just, and you know, we've talked a lot about the hardware. The hardware is pointless without incredible software. And so, I mean, iOS 9 is getting us a step closer. I still go back to my point that being able to upload files to a website in Mobile Safari is the greatest feature for the iPad, I think, in a lot, to me, more so than even multitasking.
The only one that comes close is being able to reach into any cloud storage provider and pull out an attachment file right in a message. Have you seen that feature in 9?
Yeah.
You push and hold on the text and the black edit bar comes up and there's one that says insert an attachment. And then you can go into iCloud Drive, Dropbox, Google Drive and pull something out and put it on that message. That's the only one that comes close for me.
Yeah, and the document provider API is, to me, turned out to be one of the things that is so important. And I probably feel like that's probably, it goes back to IBM, that companies don't want to have to be relying on iCloud. They want to be able to pull the documents from whatever they're using, OneDrive or Google Drive, or
Box, I don't know if you can more add, likely.
Yeah, Box, yeah, most likely Box.
Yeah.
And so I think that is smart because that was like one of those tasks that was very frustrating on iOS that was incredibly easy to do on the desktop. But now it's incredibly easy to do on iOS. And so, like, there's a podcast I fill up with every Sunday. It used to be trickier. I would, like, you know, thankfully the podcast host, like, would support Dropbox as a cloud provider. It would pop up the Dropbox, file picker in the web, and I could pick it. But now it's like I actually do it from Google Drive. I had to have a Hazel script running in the background that would move it from Google Drive to Dropbox on a Mac Mini Colo server. Now I just, like, say, click, upload from Google Drive, pick the account I want in the, you know, multiple accounts, and it uploads. From my phone, it's magical.
Yep.
The only thing, I think the next step is to be able to download files. Like, good thing, I mean, something I had today is I had someone emailed me. I got subscribed to this band's, like, album. It's like a serial album, and they send us, like, you know, every 2 months send us a new track. Mm-hmm. Well, I had to download it on my Mac, then add it to iTunes, and then sync it over to iCloud Library. That's like something I couldn't download that into either the music app or even into a document provider. I would love to be able to download files.
Yeah.
You know, again, PDFs you can do, but like it needs to be any sort of file. You can at least save it to somewhere. I'm not saying, you know, that needs to open, but just needs to be able to save it from somewhere. But it's close. So the hardware is great, but the software is equally as important.
Yeah. And I think increasingly, you know, for many things, actually, it's just a matter of mindset. You know, and I know, for example, that I have not mentally internalized the existence of document providers in the way that I could have in order to get those productivity benefits. But I also find that there are still times, you know, like the rant I had a couple of weeks ago about Microsoft Office on iOS, like why are some of these apps so incomplete? You know, they're incomplete just because, you know, it's not, there's no technical reason why, for example, in Microsoft Office, you can't arbitrarily change the margins on a document, right? There's only four presets. Well, why is that the way it is? You know, you wouldn't have four presets on desktop Office. So why are you limiting that kind of thing on iOS? And I think what is probably the most important thing about the iPad Pro right now is it's the first time, I think, since iPhoto came out for iOS back in with the iPad 3, it's the first time Apple has given clear leadership on where the iPad is going. Because from the third generation iPad until yesterday, Apple's basically got up on stage and said, here's our new iPad, here's our new iOS, we can't wait to see what you do with it. And they basically stopped telling people what to think about the iPad. But yesterday, Tim Cook got up and he said, the iPad is the clearest expression of our vision of the future of personal computing. And I don't think it gets any clearer than that. And that was an event which was just all iOS. There was no Mac stuff there at all. And I think that's the most important thing that happened yesterday. The iPad Pro, as it currently costs and as it's currently built, that'll come and go and that'll change and that'll get refined. But the fact that an iPad Pro exists, and we're now having a serious conversation about, can it replace a laptop? We had that back in the early days of, you know, great enthusiasm for iPad, but that conversation has been quiet for a few years. But that conversation is now back. And I think that is the most important thing that happened this week by some distance.
Yeah, I like that because, you know, even if someone is like, I loved my Mac more, that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's great to have options. It's like the iPod line. Buying an iPod Nano doesn't mean you think the touch is stupid. It just means the Nano fit your needs better or the Shuffle. Mm-hmm. It's great to have – people have different needs. And and saying that, like, you think – I mean, it's like the Apple TV I tweeted yesterday. I think the Apple TV looks fantastic. I'm probably not buying one right away.
Yep.
Doesn't tell me I'm not going to buy one. I'm going to wait and see. I like my Roku. There's nothing I've seen so far that the new Apple TV will do that I want to do that my Roku cannot do. Roku has the brand new Plex app that looks fantastic. Once I see the new Apple TV, they have some new apps that look incredible. Maybe there's a new television streaming service I might want to subscribe to. Mm-hmm. I might buy it. You know, the Apple Music integration looks great, but I have a Jambox and play it from my phone. I can take it with me from house to house or room to room. But again, saying I'm not buying it doesn't mean I think it sucks.
No.
And I think that's where, like, tech Twitter, like, does not compute that.
Yeah, and there's some people who are like, just really into the Mac existing, right? And I think the idea that you could have an iPad and not a Mac is very threatening to some people. But for me, I agree with you that it's about having choice. But up until iOS 8 and 9, really, that choice hasn't been there. Because what I want is I want the choice of, you know, can I choose to just have an iPad because that's what I want? And up to now, the answer has been not quite, not yet, all the time, for various reasons, mostly software rather than hardware in the last couple of generations. But still in all, the point is that I have not had the opportunity to say, I don't want to buy a Mac again. I just want to buy a big, powerful iPad, and that will do all my computing needs. And the reason that's not possible, that choice isn't quite there yet, is mostly now down to software. But with iOS 9, so many things are coming to iPad that are really important. Multitasking, keyboard stuff, you know, the keyboard shortcuts things, the keyboard case on the iPad Pro. You know, there are many, many more use cases now being opened up by the iPad Pro and iOS 9 together. And that's kind of what I'm doing over the winters. I'm going to keep my ear too. I'm going to look at what does iOS 9 give me and where are my continued pain points. And I strongly suspect that over the course of the next 6 months, I'll get to a point of view where I'll probably be able to, you know, make that switch. Presumably having a Mac in the background somewhere, you know, either a Mac Mini floating about somewhere or the Mac I use at school to do configuration stuff, I'll maybe set that up a bit more for myself to use as well. But I can see that becoming, you know, my personal device is an iPad Pro, and then there are Macs roundabout for the tasks that Macs have to do, whereas the iPad takes the majority of personal computing.
Well, and let's be real, for the vast majority of us, the computer we spend the most time on is our phones.
Most definitely, yeah. So yeah, I think it's an interesting time. I'm very happy to hear that there's sort of strong leadership call from Tim Cook. I think that's most important for the iPad. But the thing that can't, the elephant in the room that we haven't talked about is whether or not developers of serious apps can make a living selling iPad apps. And I know some of them can. I mean, Omni Group, for example, they charge good money for their iPad apps. They make a great living at it, and they make great apps. You know, as much as I've criticized the Office suite, it's still a powerful and it's easily the second nicest Office suite on the iPad. Google Docs is great, but it's clearly weak from a feature point of view compared to Office and compared to iWork. And there are some great, great apps there that are as powerful as anybody needs them to be for almost any mainstream task. But I'm just looking for them, those apps to get a bit more powerful again as well, and for developers to really focus on workflow. It's great that I can open a file in your app, but if I can't get it back out your app again, that's going to be a problem. Things like that. But I'm more optimistic than I've been in a while. I don't think the iPad Pro is going to be a huge seller right now, but I think it points the way to the future. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think it'll sell. I mean, I think they're probably making a decent amount from it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they'll sell. It'll be a profit machine in terms of when they do sell it, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And, it'd be a fun few weeks. You getting a new iPhone?
No, I'm going to stick. I've got a 64 gig 6S, sorry, 6 Plus. I'm going to stick with that for this year. Just changed the laptop. I probably should have waited on that, actually, in the light of this announcement. But it still has a lot of residual value in it, so that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if I decided to change it. But yeah, no, laptop's fixed in, phone's fixed in. Only question is what happens with the iPad.
Yeah, I'll probably stay. I like the Apple's new payment plans are really, really smart. I think these end-of-carrier subsidies on phones are like actually really great for Apple, but I'll probably stick with what I got. I got the 6 Plus, kind of mid-cycle through a trade with the listener, friend Bill Nalen. Apple still feels very new to me, and so it looks great. The new phone looks great, but I'll probably stick to what I got. New laptop in the spring for me. Mine will be 3 years old this mm-hmm. March, so probably going 13-inch Retina Pro. Probably
it's a great machine.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to go MacBook One. There's a part of me that wants to get like a space gray MacBook One.
Yeah, I just lost my nerve with such a low bass frequency in that machine. You know, it's like 1.1 gigahertz to start with. You know, it's like, hour long podcasting recordings. Don't know.
Yeah, I'll probably get the Pro. Yeah, all the ports. Need all the ports.
All the ports, all the power.
Yeah, I'm getting new, inside baseball, but I'm getting new carpet and paint in my office this week. So it's nice. I have a little few upgrades. So
get the smell of all the solvents in your office at the same time.
Yeah, like we're getting a bunch of new people in the main office are getting carpet put in. So not in the main school office. That's always something that's easily cleanable. Sick kids, you know how that goes.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, but first time I've had new carpet in about 6 years. So actually my 6 year anniversary is as in October. So it's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm.
This is my 10th year at Cedars.
Do you get like a $1,000 bonus, $100 per year?
Getting my gold Apple Watch. No, not quite.
Oh, man. Well, all right. I think we should probably wrap it up there.
Okay.
Fun times. The iPad Pro will be out in the November. So it'll be like a few. Yeah. So those dang accessories are expensive, though. You would have close to $300 in accessories if you bought both of those things. I feel like the keyboard's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Microsoft came out with the Surface and the Surface keyboard, I thought, imagine the absolute fuss it would be if Apple charged that money for a keyboard, and here they are charging even more. I mean, what is the Surface keyboard, $120? And the Apple one's $160. I actually don't like the look of it that much. I think the keyboard case is, it looks quite inelegant with the fact that you've got like the triangle part, and then you've also got the keyboard flap as well. The Surface one is much more elegant, where it's just a hinge that comes down. But what the difference, or one of the reasons why I think, is because with the Apple case, you can put it up in the kind of vertical stand position and fold the keyboard away underneath and still have the triangular part of the stand. This is all because the iPad doesn't have a kickstand, which is how Microsoft got away with making such a simple case by comparison. Can't have everything.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like $100 pen too. I mean, that's not too bad, I guess, for all it does. That pen is pretty amazing. And gosh, I'm so sick of like, if you see a stylus, they blew it quotes from Steve Jobs. Like the styluses from 2007 are not the styluses from 2015.
No. I mean, those were plastic sticks for a resistive touchscreen, right?
Right, and that was meant to be used all of the time.
Yeah. You remember those Sony Ericsson phones that you used to have where you'd flip the keypad down and then you had to use a stylus to operate the user interface? And that's what Steve was talking about. Times change, times move on, and this is not that anymore. You know,
yeah, it's not even a situation like a misdirection where, like, when he said that, who wants to watch videos on a small screen? Like, this is literally like the technology. That's like him saying all the smartphones suck, and then like Apple making one. But oh, I thought you said they all suck. Like, no, it's we made our own. There's a difference between saying what's currently on the market's terrible versus, you know, saying the whole category's terrible.
Well, I think the thing with styluses has been that they all had to be terrible because the iPad digitizer was optimized for fingers and not for pens, you know. And the fact that the iPad Pro has this new digitizer on the screen means that you, for the first time, you can build a tool like this. And I mean, I've got the 53 pencil, you know, and they're going to be unhappy about the trademark issues, but the pencil by 53 that you use with paper, and it's a really nice style. It's a kind of flat joiner's pencil kind of thing. But it's got the big fat rubber tip, the same as every other one, because that's all you could do in a world where the iPad digitizer was the way it was. But the fact, it'd be interesting to see what third-party stylus developers do, considering that the iPad Pro has got that hardware inside it. And the Apple Pencil is working on the same principle, because the iPad Pro screen is not it's not pressure sensitive in any way. It's all done in the pen. So we'll see. The market could change again.
Yes, it'll be a fun rest of the year. I'm excited. I probably wouldn't. I'll get an Apple TV probably. I'm not ready to rip out my Rokus yet. I really like the Roku. Like, it is not the prettiest. Like, the main screen is not pretty, but the Netflix app is great. The Plex app is great. And it seems to me whenever like a new streaming service starts, it's always on Roku, because they're, you know, by far the most popular one. Mm-hmm. But with the ease of the App Store, and I imagine it's fairly easy to transition a lot of your iPad code or iPhone code to the Apple TV. I mean, like, you can imagine like an Overcast app for Apple TV. I think Marco said he wasn't working on one yet, but he easily could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think for me in the UK, I'm actually looking at getting a TV set and a set-top box of some kind. And until yesterday, I was looking at the Amazon Fire TV as the one that I would get, because it's got the, you know, Amazon streaming is good. It's got Netflix, I think, on it as well. And it's also got BBC iPlayer, which is, you know, the BBC's streaming service, which the Apple TV has never had. A bizarre omission, really, from the Apple TV for years and years. But given that the BBC have got an iOS app, it would seem to me quite a strong possibility that there will be an iPlayer app for the new Apple TV. So I'm going to sit on that for a while and see what happens.
Yeah, well, and actually the Amazon Fire TV is like not on the market right now. You can buy a refurbished one, but the rumor is there's like a brand new one coming out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, yeah, I forgot you didn't have a TV.
Not yet. You know, we've been using my wife's 21-inch iMac as a TV for years. It's a 2007 iMac, but it just threw its DVD drive. So we still have quite a few DVDs that the kids like to watch. So,
what do you point your furniture at?
Other furniture. Got a goldfish bowl in here.
No, did I already make that joke? Did I make that joke last week? I feel like I've made that joke to you before.
Ah, it's a good one. We can use it twice.
Yeah, it's from Friends, like Joey Tribbiani. Yeah, it's a good other show. Have you ever watched Friends?
Nope, never once.
Joey says, like, somebody, he's kind of like the buffoon of the group. It's Matt LeBlanc. And he was like, I wouldn't have a TV. And he goes, what do you even put your furniture at? That's the old joke.
I'm working my way through Seinfeld as well. I've got to the wallet episode.
Ah, so great. That actually is probably top five of my favorite ones. He's got to put the napkins in the other end. So... Cool. All right, yeah. Usually when we get to Seinfeld references, it's time to wrap up for the week. So thanks to our sponsors this week, Tap Typing, Shobi, and EasyWatch.com. Thanks for sponsoring the show. If you're looking for any services from our sponsors, we would greatly appreciate if you would check them out. It helps the show, keeps the show going. And I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
If you have any comments about the show, there's a feedback form at outofschool.net. And thanks for listening, everybody.
I sort of imagine Jerry Seinfeld doing a bit about 16 gig iPhones. What is the deal with 16 gig? You take two pictures and it's full.